Unemployment may be at record levels, but thanks to the growing popularity of the local food movement, farming is once again being seen as a viable career option, especially for people 35 and under. In fact, Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture in Pocantico Hills, New York, is currently hosting its second annual Young Farmers Conference, designed to educate newcomers to the field. Joining me to talk about this trend is Fred Kirschman, president of the board of directors at the Stone Barn Center, along with Zach Wolf, currently a field manager at the Stone Barn Center, and Emma Hoyt, who is a farmer at the Shelter Island Farm at Sylvester Manor on Long Island. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Hi. Pleasure.
Fred, so not only are the folks at the Stone Barn Center growing vegetables and raising livestock while serving delicious food at the Blue Hill Restaurant, you're also growing farmers.
That's right.
Is this a popular conference?
Yes, it really is. In fact, it surprised me because last year when we did our first conference, we put it on our website and our apprentices and interns kind of spread the word. And I thought, you know, if we get 20 or 30 young people out for this, that'll be really great. And the day of the conference, we had 171. And this year we sold out at 200 and had more that wanted to come.
Yeah. And Emma, are you attracted by classes like Beginning Poultry, Introduction to Permaculture, and Financing the Farm?
Absolutely. I've learned a lot being a farmer, but there's so much more to learn. There's always subjects that I'm going to need to know about.
Well, there were always agricultural colleges, weren't there? Is there something like that available to somebody like you, Zach?
Well, I've already gone through the collegiate process about as far as I'd like to take it, I think.
Studying farming or something else?
I studied environmental biology, actually. So it's related. We're always working with ecosystems and ecosystem processes. But the Young Farmers Conference is a nice opportunity for the farming community in this area to get together and sort of share experience and the knowledge base.
Well, in this case, they're talking, Fred, to real farmers, and people who, it's not theory, it's not college courses, it's hands-on stuff.
That's right, and the teachers of the conference are farmers who are actively engaged in farming, so it's really a peer learning, you know, kind of process, and it's the energy among the group is really quite fantastic to watch.
You offer internships, apprenticeships, workshops throughout the year as well?
That's right. Yes, we do. Right.
So what's happening to the farmers we have? Are we losing farmers at a rapid rate? Yeah.
Yes, we really are. And one of the problems that we have in terms of the public perception here is that USDA is still using a 1974 definition of a farm, which is anyone who produces $1,000 in gross sales, or who would have produced $1,000 gross sales if they had, you know, sold what they were capable of producing, they qualify as a farm.
Wait, so in other words, if I buy a house that used to be on a farm and I grow enough of my own vegetables to have potentially be able to sell them for $1,000 a year, I'm a farmer?
Yeah, you don't even have to be living in a house that used to be on a farm. You can live in a suburban community. You know, Lisa Hamilton did a story about this, in fact, when the 2007 statistics came out. And she said, I live in a suburban community and I have four chickens in my backyard. And if I really paid attention to that, I could earn $500. So all I need to do is get four more chickens and I'm a farmer.
Well, over 60% of the farmers, of the old traditional farmers, are over the age of 55. So we're really and the sense was that once they died out, we were going to have a major crisis.
Well, according to the 2007 statistics, the statistics are even a little more worrisome than that, because if you look at the distribution, the age distribution, almost 30% of our farmers now are over 65, and only a little over 5% are under age 35. So we're headed for a very serious, in my view, a very serious human capital problem that we have to deal with.
The New York Times has reported that the average farmer today is a 57-year-old white man who farms 418 acres and generates $135,000 in agricultural sales. $135,000 in sales doesn't sound like a living if you have a family.
That's right. And but the
other
thing,
there are costs built into that, aren't there?
Yeah, right. And if you look at the statistics in terms of the amount of income that farmers earn from their farming activities over against the expenses required to produce that income, they've had very little net income since about the middle of the 1980s.
So with all of this in mind, Emma and Zach, what's going on with you? Emma? Doesn't this sound discouraging?
Yeah. I guess as a farmer, monetary, financial things were never that important to me. I do it for the food and for the environmental benefits and the health benefits. And that, to me, is much more important than the amount of money I'm taking away, although it would be nice to make enough money to live.
Did you grow up in a farming situation?
No, I grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey. And I have an uncle who worked on farms, but that's it. The rest of my family doesn't have anything to do with farming.
And you, Zach, did you grow up in a farming situation?
I didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up in a rural part of Connecticut and had the opportunity to be around different farm families. And that was a really important influence for me growing up, is to experience that type of work and really that type of lifestyle. I think that's what attracted me to it more than anything else was.
So you think that if you grew up in the city, you might not have been attracted to farming?
It's hard to say.
hypothetically,
but I'm optimistic. I think the present state of affairs in terms of the demographics of older farmers and the lack of new farmers creates tremendous opportunity. And that's sort of where I see hopefully myself and Emma and Stone Barn Center all fitting into creating solutions.
Fred, the number of farms has shrunk since 1935. It used to be 6.8 million farms. Now it's 2 to 2.5 million farms. But has the acreage shrunk as well, or are we just seeing larger farms?
The acreage has shrunk slightly because, you know, farmland is being converted into development, et cetera. So we've seen that to some extent, yeah. But primarily what's happened is that the farms have simply gotten larger. There's been a continuous increase in the number of farms that are over $500,000 in gross sales and the farms that are $5,000 in gross sales or less. Everything else, all the other sizes of farms in between have been decreasing.
So the successful farmers are really in agribusiness.
Yes, but again, it depends on how you define success, because there isn't a lot of net income in the agribusiness, in terms of net income. And of course,
even with the people with the big farms.
Yes, right. And I think it's probably fair to say that if it weren't for government subsidies and off-farm jobs, even the large farms would be in serious economic difficulty.
Do farmers need to have a business education to be successful these days?
Well, I think it certainly helps, but I want to also say that it sounds like it's all gloom and doom here when you look at the economics of agriculture. But one of the things that to me is so heartening, and we see it at Stone Barns all the time, is not only do we have this new generation of young people who want to farm and who are smart and who are not afraid of complexity and not afraid of all of the kinds of new things that we need to do. We're talking now about a future farming system that's going to be knowledge intensive, because there are new models, new ways of doing this. But the other thing is that there's also a new market that's emerging that a lot of people are referring to now as relationship value. It's all about relationships. That's why farmers markets and CSAs have become so successful, because you can actually shake the hand of the farmer that's growing the food for you. And people want that. They want that trusting relationship. And so building those trusting relationships means they also want to know that the farmer is well cared for. So they're much more willing, you know, to pay the kind of price that's necessary so the farmers can have a decent life.
In the past, that kind of relationship was available to restaurateurs, to chefs,
that's
who
right.
would develop relationships because they wanted to get farmers to grow the things that they wanted to cook with. But for the rest of us, it was, and even now I go into a supermarket in my neighborhood and all of the vegetables are shrink-wrapped under, you know, with that styrofoam bottom, and I can't even pick out the vegetables that I want, let alone have a relationship with anybody.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So we have the divergence now in the two types of food system, and the one is basically fast, convenient, and cheap, and the other is, you know, what my friend Rick Schneiders with the Sysco Corporation refers to as memory, romance, and trust. He said, "You want a product that is so good that when your customer eats it, they say, 'Wow, where did that come from? I want that again.' And then they want a good story with it. They want to know that the farmers were treated fairly. They want to know the animals were treated appropriately, et cetera. And they want that trusting relationship."
So I guess you have to have good stories to tell the people who are buying your vegetables.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think the other part of it is that it makes it easier for the farmer once the consumer has some sort of awareness of what it means to farm and produce the food. And right. So they're more understanding when things change with the season, when they have to maybe pay a little bit more than they're accustomed to paying. All of those things come once they've just tasted a little bit of actual farm work or even been to a farm, which I feel like most people have never experienced.
My CSA members actually demanded stories from our farm.
They want you to tell them stories?
The weekly newsletter, they wanted to know what was going on, why we had so much kale and not enough tomatoes, and, you know, what we were doing on the farm, what was happening with the chickens.
My guests are Emma White, who is a farmer at the Shelter Island Farm at Sylvester Manor, Zach Wolf, a field manager at the Stone Barn Center, and also we are speaking with Fred Kirschemann, who is president of the board of directors at the Stone Barn Center. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Fred Kirschemann, president of the board of directors at the Stone Barn Center, Zach Wolf, currently a field manager at the center, and Emma Hoyt, who's a farmer at the Shelter Island Farm at Sylvester Manor. And I'm assuming that the younger farmers are going into it with a different attitude toward farming, because so much of the talk these days is about organic farming, specialty farming, local farming. Is that what attracted the two of you, Zach?
Well, as I was talking about earlier, it was really my personal experience with the work that was most attractive. I mean, there's
getting your hands on the soil.
Yeah, very much a hands-on type of person, and I sort of had the concept from maybe somewhere in high school on that it was an important endeavor, and so that plays into it, the having an idea that you're playing a part in something that's important socially. And then there's also the intellectual aspect, understanding the biology of the systems that you're working with, and that's constantly changing and evolving. But primarily, and I think most importantly, it's just the direct relationship I have with the work and the land that I have the opportunity to manage.
Well, can you walk us through a typical day? What, as a field manager, does your day look like?
It varies greatly depending on the season. This morning I started harvesting around 6:30, and because we had the Young Farmers Conference going on, I sort of skipped out a little bit early, but I managed to get some things to the restaurant and went to the workshops I was planning on. So the days vary greatly. We harvest about 4 days out of the week, working with apprentices and interns on anything from preparing beds for planting to cultivating to harvesting.
Well, Stone Barns is a four-season farm, and that's a rarity, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our focus really in terms of vegetable production is to both extend the season through the fall and into the winter, and then also produce things year-round in a greenhouse space. So we have a half-acre greenhouse that's producing throughout the year, and then in the field space that I work in, we're growing about 1,600 bed feet of spinach under low tunnels that we'll be able to harvest throughout the winter months. And so these are really simple technologies that we're trying to showcase to a certain extent because the center gets so much traffic amongst consumers and producers alike, especially when farmers come. It's something that they can see working and hopefully apply on their own farms.
But didn't you begin your farming experience at Stone Barns as an apprentice?
I was an apprentice at Stone Barns. I had done a year before that at a different farm, but the majority of my farming career was at Stone Barns.
And now you work at the Shelter Island farm. How did you come to work there?
I actually met my boss, Bennett Kinesny, at the last Young Farmers Conference. I was working at Stone Barns, and I was looking for a new farm. And he was there and looking for farmers to start up his new farm.
Tell us a bit about what you do there.
I am the field manager there. It's on an estate that has been in Bennett's family for 15 generations. And it's been a farm through its history, off and on again. And this is the newest generation of that farm. We're a small organic farm right now, vegetables, 1 acre, and a couple of chickens and pigs. And eventually the plan is to grow much bigger. We have 243 acres.
But it sounds to me like there's not a lot of money involved. It's more just about the experience of farming. Because the statistics there are interesting. Only 1 million of the 2.2 million American farms reported positive income from agriculture. It sounds like it can be a nonprofit business.
Yeah.
I'm in nonprofit radio, so I understand. There's a sacrifice that's made sometimes because you think you're doing something that's important in your life.
Definitely. We're the only farm on the island, and we're only
really?
A year
right now
old.
The only?
Mm-hmm.
It used to be Long Island was a major farming area.
Well, Long Island, yeah, that area is a big agriculture.
Oh,
we're
Shelter
on Shelter
Island.
Island. It's a tiny island, but it used to have more farms on it. There's a lot of older people that remember when there was farms.
So, Fred, are most farmers today still mostly white males, or is there a growing number of females and minorities coming on board?
There are a growing number of females, and it is especially true globally. In fact, I keep hearing figures like 60 to 70% of the world's farmers are women. But they're also – and we're seeing this also at the Stone Barns. I mean, last year at our farmer conference, 60% of the people that came to the Young Farmer Conference last year were women, and 40% were men. And we haven't done the numbers yet this year, but it looks like it's more like 50-50. But still, there's a very large contingent of females, right?
And also, we're seeing more people from various minorities getting back into it. Will Allen has become a national figure, yes. And one of MacArthur – the founder of Growing Power in Milwaukee.
Right.
Is it harder for a woman still in this business? Because we usually, women in the past were usually the farmer's wife, weren't they?
Yeah, I'd say the only problem is physical. I can't lift as much as a man could, but I think in every other aspect we're equal. Maybe sometimes superior.
Maybe the details.
Listener asks, is it ironic that the Young Farmers Conference is taking place at the site of a very expensive restaurant, one that's too expensive for the average person to visit?
Well, we get into the whole issue of the cost of food, and clearly, you know, we have some problems generally in terms of food being affordable to all citizens. I mean, we are currently producing enough calories of food for every man, woman, and child on the planet, and still we have about 1 billion people that are going hungry. And it's not because we aren't producing enough food. It's because they can't afford the food or don't have access to the food. So we have some serious problems here that we have to look at. And certainly it's well known that the Blue Hill restaurant is a very upscale restaurant, and it, as you say, it's not affordable for a lot of people. But the thing that's happening there is the relationship between the chefs in the restaurant and the farmers on the farm. And what we're discovering now as the chefs and the farmers work together is that the quality of taste that people like Dan Barber as a chef demands in the restaurant can best be met by the agroecological practices on the farm. In other words, developing good healthy soil and using that soil and producing the vegetables within the right time frame. So all of those relationships become so important. And so even though not everybody can eat at the restaurant, we're still a demonstration to children, to young farmers, to ordinary citizens. I mean, we have about 100,000 people that come through there a year now, and they learn about all of this, even though they perhaps some of them can't eat at the restaurant.
You also oversee the management of your family's 3,500-acre certified organic farm in North Dakota.
That's correct, yes.
I'm assuming that that is also because it's organic, is not for everyone. Are you selling those what you grow on farmers' markets? Or?
No, well, we're a small grain and livestock operation, and so we sell our products in bulk, and we sell them. We have relationships with companies. For example, our Durham wheat is all sold to Eden Foods, which makes an organic pasta out of our Durham. And so it's those kinds of relationships we've developed at that level.
Part of the problem is that farmland is still expensive to buy, isn't it? So how do if you decided to have your own farm, it might be quite difficult.
Yeah, I think that's where the need to be creative comes in, and I feel optimistic about it. I don't think the old paradigm of investing in a piece of land, taking out loans, buying equipment, building barns, sort of that American farm dream might exist for me or for a lot of farmers. But I think there are a lot of creative new ways to make it work. There are a lot of, as Fred was speaking to, a lot of older farmers who are moving out of the trade. And as that transition takes place, I think there's a land acquisition, and there are land acquisitions that are taking place every day from the older generation to the newer generation.
Would you like to have your own farm, Emma?
Yeah, I would. I would say that it's happening. There are ways to get access to land without having to buy it, but I'd say there's a big need for more programs and help for people to be able to get to land.
Well, I used to be friendly with dairy farmers who work day jobs to keep the dairy farm going, and a lot of farmers work second jobs, don't they?
Yes. In fact, the statistics I've seen is that more than half of the farms have somebody working off the farm for health insurance and other sources of income. I think, though, that the other thing too that it's important to keep in mind in terms of what we're very aware. With the Stone Barn Center being 30 minutes outside of New York City, where land values are very expensive, and if we're going to be a demonstration of sustainable agriculture, it has to be sustainable economically. So, a farmer comes to our center and looks at what we're doing and what the land costs are. It's very clear that a farmer could never pay for that land in the form of rent or whatever form and be able to make it work just selling food. So we have to think about other ways to generate income, and that's part of what we're doing.
Listener pointed out that being a farmer's wife is by no means an easy job, and I didn't mean to suggest that it was. I just meant that there was a different kind of job. My great thanks to the three of you for being with us, Fred Kirschemann, Zach Wolf, and Emma Hoyt. It's been a real pleasure
talking
with you.
Pleasure to be here.